Providence for Today welcomes you to the study of God's incomparably precious and never-changing Word. This is Pastor David Simpson. On behalf of Providence Church of Powell, Tennessee, and friends of the Gospel of God's Sovereign Grace, we trust God will powerfully and effectually reveal His Word to our hearts and apply it to our lives. The Providence Church place of worship is located at 104 Faust Kearney Road. You'll find us on Clinton Highway, just up from the Claxton Elementary School. When writing, please address mail to P.O. Box 1467, Powell, Tennessee, that's simply TN, 37849. Our radio broadcast, Sunday sermons, and other resources are available on our website. Please visit us at www.providenceundergrace. Now that is all one word, providenceundergrace.com. You can also listen to additional messages by downloading the Sermon Audio mobile app on your handheld devices or by visiting sermonaudio.com. Then if you will type in Pastor David Simpson, you will find your location. And you can find us on Facebook at Providence Church. Of course, your interest and attendance with us in worship on Sundays at 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock is always welcomed. I will bring a message in both hours from God's Word and from my heart. We are now in our fourth year on WYSH Radio, broadcasting out of Clinton and Knoxville, Tennessee, which are nestled in the foothills of the beautiful Smoky Mountains, one of the most visited places in all of the world. By means of the Internet, the broadcast has the potential of reaching folks with the gospel across the globe, to those who listen to our broadcasts in other states, countries, and continents, you are most welcome guests of Providence Church. I continue to be grateful for the support and the prayers of so many. It is my prayer that God will cause His Word to reach His chosen sheep, that He will call each one by His sovereign grace declared in His gospel, wherein the righteousness of God is revealed. This revelation of God's righteousness came by the glorious person and finished work of Jesus Christ. It came not before Him, and it came not without Him. He earned and established righteousness. The Father accepted and imputed the righteousness. Just as sin was imputed in connection with Adam's disobedience, righteousness was imputed in connection with Christ's obedience. As the first resulted in condemnation, the latter resulted in justification. Therefore, justification is not by man's act of faith, but by God's sovereign imputation of righteousness. Since the saving blessings of grace were applied at the cross, God's unconditional election before the foundation of the world must be true. I ask you this, would it be more difficult for God to redeem at the cross or to elect in eternity? Well, of course, neither is difficult for God. In fact, He is sovereign in both. What is faith? Faith is God's gift in each generation to these same ones whom God chose and for whom Christ died, that they might see and know and rest in this sovereign election and this sovereign justification at the cross. God's election of some to salvation before the foundation of the world finds its greatest purpose and fulfillment in this sovereign work at the cross. Now, to most, this doctrine is hated. It is cold. It is austere. But I declare to you, rather, it is warm. It is comforting. It is calling to the heart. If there were no election, there could be no particular and effectual work of redemption, no justification at the cross. Christ could not be a Savior, but only a potential Savior. That would mean He came to this world and He saved no one. How could He possibly say it is finished? If no election, salvation must be by man's will and man's works. If God didn't elect, then man must elect himself. And of course, that opposes all we know in the Scriptures. Well, in our studies of Bible characters, we have looked at Adam and Eve, and then at their sons Cain and Abel. Then we turned our attention to Noah, and now we have turned our attention to Abraham. And we are in our eighth study of Abraham, so we're moving along, but sort of at a snail's pace. But I hope you're enjoying the study. Today's theme is Lot parted from Abraham. Now, here are the things that we have seen concerning Abraham. First of all, God provided Abraham with prevenient grace, that is, grace before the revelation of grace. We have seen, without question, that God chose Abraham. Number three, God made Abraham the ancestor of Christ. That's the first thing noted in the book of Matthew, therefore the first thing in the New Testament. We have seen that God called Abraham. We have seen that God taught Abraham to worship God by blood sacrifice. Then number six, we have seen that God made four promises to Abraham. And then last week, I believe it was last week, we saw that God proved Abraham by trials. And so this seventh point of truth concerning Abraham will take us for several weeks. This is going to be our course through the life of Abraham. For God did use trials to prove Abraham and to make Abraham what he wanted him to be. Well, concerning these trials, that God proved Abraham by trials, we have seen that, first of all, God called Abraham to seek a home that he knew not. It tells us in Hebrews 11, verse 8, that Abraham went out not knowing where he went. So it was a trial for him to seek a home that he knew not. We just pass over that, but that was a great trial for this new believer. Secondly, he suffered from without, according to Genesis 12, and verse 6 and verse 10, it says that the Canaanite was then in the land, and then there was famine in the land. Saying there was Canaanite in the land means that there were warlike tribes all around him. And a new fella, like Abraham, was not welcomed. They were happy to take his flocks. They were happy to take his wife and his family from him. Canaanite was then in the land. And then it says that there was famine in the land, and without water and without food to feed his family and his herds, how was Abraham to stay alive? He suffered from without. And then thirdly, we looked at this, and that is that Abraham appeared before Pharaoh in chapter 12, in verses 15 and following. First of all, Abraham misunderstood God's character. It was needless for him to lie. He misunderstood God's electing grace. It was needless for him to protect himself. God would protect him. And therefore, the third thing he misunderstood was God's power. And that is that God would provide a son. This would be a major problem for Abraham all through the course of his life, that he felt that he must protect himself in order for this son to be brought to pass. But the fact is that God's own power would be what would bring Isaac to light and to life. And then the fourth matter, and that's what brings us to the point today, is this matter of the separation between Abraham and Lot. And if you have your scriptures, take them and look in the 13th chapter, and you'll find the text that tells us of this separation. It tells us in chapter 13 and verse 2 that Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. So he had both immediate currency, and he had long-term investment. But he also had a great deal of responsibility. And every day, he had to think about how to protect and preserve that which was his. But I'm going to pick up with verse number 5 and read forward through verse 14 So again, if you've had time to find your scriptures, would you read along with me? It says in verse 5, "And Lot also, which went with Abraham, had flocks and herds and tents, and the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together." By that it means not able to bear Abraham and Lot, that they might dwell together. For their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was strife, or conflict, or contention, between the herdsmen of Abram's cattle, and the herdsmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwell then in the land. That is, the conflicting tribes. Verse 8 it says, "And Abraham said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdsmen and thy herdsmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take to the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes, and behold all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. And the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. And the Lord said unto Abram, After that Lot was separated from him, Lift up now thine eyes, and look from the place where thou art, northward, and southward, and eastward, and westward. Now I want to ask you to consider several lessons that we gain from the incident that we've just looked at. First of all, riches are often the source of conflict. It says the land was not able to bear them, for their substance was great. How often we have heard or read or understood of those who have great wealth having conflict concerning the wealth. Now, make no mistake about it. Those who are poor also have conflict in their lives. But here we're looking at folks who probably would not have conflict, but the conflict arose because of the greatness of their substance. Now, the scripture tells us in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and in verse 10, "For the love of money is the root of all evil." Notice it's not money itself, but it's the love of money. It's the attitude toward the money. It's the treatment of the money. It's the way money motivates one to feel and to act toward others. The love of money is a root, and that root has fruit. And that fruit, of course, is what he calls evil. It is not just all evil, but all kinds of evil, all kinds of conflict, all kinds of hurt, all kinds of pain. So the prominence of the land here is very apparent when we look at this. And it is the place where there continues to be worldwide struggle at this time in 2014. Riches and the land are often the source of conflict. But may I say to you, my beloved, don't let strife control your life. It hardens the heart. It destroys happiness. It hinders spiritual progress. If you have to walk away, simply walk away. But don't let strife and conflict control your life. Here's the second thing. Riches often are the source of conflict, and number two, conflict is infectious. That is, it's like an infection. If you've ever had an infection, You know, that infection, if it's not taken care of, will grow and spread and become dangerous, even to fatal. Well, it tells us here, if you look at this in chapter 7, that it was the herdsman, and then the Canaanite, and the Perizzite. So it was those who were close, and it was those who were the tribes that were close at hand. So the herdsmen that were hired were conflicting with each other, and the tribes that were close, it was causing conflict between them. So the conflict had spread out. It began simply on the part, probably, of Lot toward Abram, from looking at the circumstance. But then it spread out to the herdsmen, the hired people, and then to the other tribes that were around. So it's like an infection. It reminds me of what John said when he said, "They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would no doubt have continued with us. But they went out that it might be made manifest that they were not all of us." And so conflict has an infection. And I don't know exactly what the conflict was in John, but the fact is that they had some there who were not believers in the gospel. And it was out of that that there arose a conflict that John says that they went out from us because they were not of us. So I ask you to remember that riches often are the source of conflict. Conflict is like an infection. But in the face of this, how did Abram respond? Well, Abram was generous and gracious. In verse 9, he said, "If you will take to the left, I will go to the right. If you depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left." Well, the land rightly belonged to Abram, not to Lot at all. And furthermore, he was the elder, so he had every right to choose. And furthermore, God's promise was to Abram, it was not to Lot. And further, he could have simply announced his decision and said, "This is the way it's going to be." But Abraham generously left the decision to Lot. Abram trusted God's wisdom and providence in his own behalf. Friends, here is what Abraham did. He took his nephew to a prominent rise in the land to speak to him. Both stood at the heights of Bethel, and they were looking at a place over the land of promise. Looking to the north, looking to the east, looking to the west, they would see nothing but dry hills. They were not inviting, however, to Lot, because they looked very dry, very austere. And he craved something more. And I'm quite sure that Mrs. Lot craved something more. And I wouldn't be surprised if his girls didn't crave quite a bit more. So when he looked out, to the southeast lay the fertile alluvial plain of the Jordan River. It was moist and green and luxuriant. But what went with it was the political and the moral situations of the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. He made a bad decision, but he chose the valley and he chose the city life for himself, for his wife, and for his daughters. I'm very confident that he made that decision thinking that he could control anything that took place where he went. What a momentous occasion this was. What agony it brought to Abram and what agony it brought to Lot. What a trial and what torment it was to Abram. Now here's what I've said. Riches often are the source of conflict. Conflict is like an infection. Abraham was generous and gracious. Let me back up here a minute and say, if you have conflict in your home, root it out. Find what the cause is. settle it, and move beyond it. Abraham was generous, and he was gracious. May we all follow after his pattern. But in order to understand this right, we have to consider Lot. So I want to ask you to consider several things about Lot. Lot probably acquired the wealth that he had with the death of his father, Haran. You could look back and see him introduced in chapter 11, 27, and 28. He traveled with his grandfather, Terah, and his uncle Abram out of Ur in chapter 11, 29 to 32. And then when we come to chapter 13 in verse 5, it simply tells us that Lot also had flocks and herds and tents. It appears to me when I think about Lot that he was a man without much personal direction, without much personal motivation, not a self-starter. But he seemed to hang on. He hung on to Abraham. And he seemed to provide actually very little to the family and to the circumstance. Nevertheless, Abraham felt responsible for him. Here's the second thing. Lot followed Abraham into the promised land. It says in 12:4, "So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him." Notice it says that as the Lord had spoken to him, that is to Abram. It doesn't say anything about the Lord speaking to Lot. So I'm caused to ask this question. Was he simply caught up in the fervor of Abram's call and communion with the Lord? Number three, Lot made a disastrous decision because it tells us in 13:10 he chose the plain of Jordan. Friends, Lot's decisions remind us of John's verse that reads like this, "All that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but of the world." The plain had beauty as the Garden of Eden, but he failed to consider the character of the people as Eve failed to consider the character of the serpent. And we will see later that God destroyed it for its rampant, egregious sexual behavior given over to homosexuality. Paul described it in Romans 1, saying in verse 26, "For this cause God gave them up to vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature, and likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error, which was meet." Oh, that our generation would read and heed these verses. There's a fourth thing. Not only that Lot acquired his wealth from his father, he followed Abram into the promised land, he made a disastrous decision. But number four, Lot left the altar, the sacrifice, and the worship in Bethel. Think of that now. He left the altar, the sacrifice, and the worship in Bethel. God had instructed Abram to build an altar and instructed him to make sacrifices, and he made those sacrifices in the camp, and Lot was there. Now, God didn't instruct Lot, and he certainly did not instruct him to go to the plain down in Jordan and build an altar and make a sacrifice. Well, he might have pretended that he was going to, but he really had no heart for it. God didn't instruct him. May I say to you, dear friend, Lot bartered away the worship of God for the beauty and the ease of the valley. Friends, if God sends one of his children to Sodom, he will protect him. God did that with Daniel and his companions in Babylon. But if he doesn't send you there, you best stay close to the place where the gospel is preached and God is worshipped in truth. Universalists and the ignorant think such worship is free anywhere. It is not. And Lot found out. Here's number five thing to consider about Lot. Lot's swift movement to corruption. If you read it carefully, Lot saw, Lot chose, and Lot separated. He saw his opportunity to increase his riches and discover his independence, and he seized it. In 13:11, it says he journeyed east. Verse 12, he dwelled in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent towards Sodom. much passes before this next thing that I mentioned, but in 19 and verse 1, chapter 19 and verse 1, Lot is a magistrate in Sodom. He had turned his back on true worship. He had lost any sense of a testimony of a believer and is externally one with the evil. If he lifted his voice in remonstrance to the wickedness of his day, business suffered. He was laughed to scorn, perhaps even threatened with violence. We know his family was. He didn't know and he didn't take seriously any warnings early on, but the scriptures say the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly in 13:13. I have a feeling that Lot knew that but didn't heed it. Further, he failed to heed the pattern of separation that God gave to Abram. Paul said it like this, "Wherefore come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord." 2 Corinthians 6:17. Primarily that speaks of spiritually, but it leads to the moral side of life as well. Lot suffered within during this time. Lot is among the strange characters found in the scriptures. Now why do I say that? Well, when I go to the New Testament and I hear what Peter said as he spoke of judgment, he said this in 2 Peter 2, verses 5 through 9. God spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those after should live ungodly. And he delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. For that righteous man, dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. The Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations. First of all, he was just or justified, and that was purely a declaration of grace. He earned, deserved, decided, and sought nothing from God in a saving way. Yet God chose him as an object of grace. God imputed righteousness to him in connection with Christ's death on the cross, just as much as he did Abraham. He experienced much ruin, but God protected him from final judgment. Jehovah passed his judgment upon Christ. Here's another thing about Lot. Twice Peter used the word vexed. And it means that Lot felt worn out, worn down, weary, oppressed, and afflicted. What he saw and heard from day to day was more than he could bear. Sexual debauchery, depravity, decadence surrounded him and his family. You're probably like me. I feel the same vexation in modern America. But I want you to consider another thing, and that is that Abraham suffered at the actions of Lot. It tells us that the Lord said unto Abraham after Lot was separated from him. Abram had seen Lot grow from infancy. Together they had traveled from Ur to Haran, they were forced to take part in bearing Haran, his father and brother respectively. They assisted each other in bearing Terah, their father and grandfather respectively. Lot had listened to Abram speak of God's call to Ur, and Haran, and then Bethel. Lot saw Abram build an altar and make sacrifices. No doubt the history and doctrine was declared each time, traced back to Noah, Seth, Abel, and Adam. Lot had given indication he believed as well. Abraham was still thrilled to think that he had returned to the God of their fathers. Lot had seen God deliver Abram and Sarah out of Egypt, and this conflict arose. What a pain it was. All these trials speak to Abraham, and yet it's Abram that's going to be called to go down to Hebron, a place that signifies friendship. And there he is called the friend of God. My dear friend, my time has passed away. I hope you'll listen next week as we continue. I am Pastor David Simpson saying until the next time, may the light of providence direct all your paths, and may the hand of providence supply all your needs.